In an England where magic is merely historical footnote, two men are about to change everything. The year is 1806, and theoretical magicians gather in dusty rooms to discuss a craft none can practice. Until, that is, a reclusive Yorkshire gentleman named Gilbert Norell animates the statues of York Cathedral, announcing himself as England's only practicing magician. Peevish and possessive of his vast library of magical texts, Norell arrives in London determined to restore English magic to respectability on his terms alone. When Sir Walter Pole's beautiful fiancée dies before their wedding, Norell seizes his opportunity. He resurrects her through a dangerous bargain with a fairy gentleman with thistle-down hair who demands half the lady's life as payment. The resurrection makes Norell famous, but sets in motion a web of enchantment that will trap several souls between worlds. Magic has returned to England, but at what cost? Where Norell spent decades in solitary study, Jonathan Strange discovers his magical abilities almost accidentally. Handsome, sociable, and intuitive, Strange is everything Norell is not. Their relationship evolves from master-pupil to an uneasy partnership and eventually bitter rivalry. Strange's battlefield magic during the Napoleonic Wars, creating roads through impassable terrain, animating hands of mud to pull down French cavalry, demonstrates his practical genius. But the philosophical divide between them grows insurmountable. Norell insists on respectable, modern magic divorced from fairy influence, while Strange becomes convinced that the wild magic of John Usglass, the legendary Raven King who once ruled Northern England, remains the foundation of all English magical practice. Their schism reflects the cultural tensions of early 19th century England, caught between Enlightenment rationality and romantic imagination. What begins as intellectual disagreement will eventually trap them both in a darkness of Strange's creation. The gentleman with thistle-down hair, beautiful, capricious, and utterly amoral, becomes the novel's most captivating villain. Each night, he forces Lady Pole and Stephen Black, Sir Walter's dignified black butler, to attend endless balls at his decaying mansion of lost hope while their bodies in England waste away. His casual cruelty, transforming a man into an oak tree for bumping into Stephen, contrasts with his childlike delight in beautiful objects. Through this character, we see how enchantment parallels colonization. The fairy appropriates humans without regard for their autonomy, just as imperial powers claimed foreign lands and peoples. Stephen Black's double oppression, by human society through racism and by fairy magic through enchantment, creates the novel's most poignant narrative. Born on a slave ship and named by a master, Stephen has built a respectable life through extraordinary competence, yet remains defined by others' perceptions. His journey toward freedom becomes intertwined with the fate of English magic itself. John Usglass, the Raven King, never physically appears, yet dominates the novel's magical philosophy. This mysterious figure, stolen as a child into faerie, returned to conquer Northern England and ruling for three centuries before vanishing, represents magic in its purest form. Norell attempts to erase him from magical history, systematically purchasing books mentioning the Raven King and promoting a sanitized version of magical practice. Strange increasingly believes the opposite, that all English magic derives from the Raven King's systems and cannot be separated from them. The novel suggests that magic itself has consciousness, existing as a semi-sentient force flowing through the land. The prophecy delivered by the street magician Vinculus, written on his body in magical symbols, reveals that Strange and Norell themselves are merely parts of a spell John Usglass is performing. Their actions, seemingly driven by free will, ultimately fulfill the Raven King's long-dormant plans to restore magic to England. Even their rivalry serves his greater purpose, as their combined strengths, Norell's scholarship and Strange's intuition, are necessary to reawaken England's magical heritage. Magic exacts devastating tolls on its practitioners and those close to them. Lady Pole endures a half-existence, spending her nights dancing in lost hope while appearing mad during her days. Arabella Strange suffers a similar fate when the gentleman with thistledown hair, obsessed with her beauty, orchestrates her abduction and leaves an enchanted moss oak substitute in her place. Jonathan Strange's descent into magical obsession culminates in his creation of a tincture of madness derived from distilled mouse bones that allows him to see fairy enchantments, but surrounds him with perpetual darkness. Norell's story reveals how magic's price can be paid gradually, almost imperceptibly. His bargain with the fairy brings him the recognition he craves, but corrupts the very revival of English magic he sought to achieve. His self-imposed isolation transforms into a more insidious form of solitude, surrounded by people yet increasingly disconnected from genuine human interaction. The novel suggests that magic's greatest cost manifests in the erosion of human connections. Yet Clark weaves hope through this darkness. Strange and Norell's relationship evolves from rivalry to partnership, suggesting that magical knowledge, while isolating, can also forge unique bonds. Their time together in Strange's darkness reveals an unexpected truth. Shared magical obsession can create its own form of intimacy, even as it separates them from the wider world. The novel's resolution brings transformation rather than conclusion. Strange and Norell vanish into magical realms with their houses and libraries, creating space for magic to flourish anew. Lady Pole emerges from enchantment with fairy knowledge, while Stephen Black transforms from servant to sovereign as king of a fairy realm. Arabella's reunion with Jonathan remains bittersweet. He must continue his magical wanderings, promising to return when two magicians shall appear in England. Magic returns in unexpected ways as practitioners emerge from all walks of life. Country parsons conversing with birds, shopkeepers mending objects with a touch. The magical community splits between experimental Strangeites and studious Norellites, with John Childermass serving as a bridge between factions, declaring he follows both magicians in some degree. This democratization transforms society as women establish schools of magical theory and working-class practitioners integrate magic into daily life. The Raven King's prophecy fulfills itself not through one dramatic event, but through countless small magical awakenings, creating a diverse magical ecosystem unlike anything in England's past. The novel explores how knowledge transforms into power. Norell controls magic by hoarding books and establishing himself as England's sole magical authority, while Strange democratizes knowledge through publication and open practice. Their conflict embodies fundamental tensions in knowledge management. The fairy gentleman wields power through enchantment that distorts perception and reality, using mirrors and illusions to control others' understanding of the world. In contrast, the Raven King represents a primordial power flowing through nature, wild and resistant to institutional control. Books function as contested power symbols. Norell's library represents both preservation and imprisonment of knowledge, while Strange's publications symbolize liberation. This tension between written and practical knowledge permeates the narrative. These themes echo contemporary issues around information access, the struggle between institutional authority, Norell, and innovative disruption, Strange, parallels modern debates about academic gatekeeping and intellectual property. The novel suggests that magic, like knowledge, ultimately resists absolute control, reflecting current discussions about information freedom and the balance between preserving and sharing knowledge.